75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
We have John Burgess with us, and he's on the line from New Jersey. How are you?
Fine, Jerry. I want to thank you for having me on the show.
Well, you know, let's talk about a few things. First of all, you're coming to Oklahoma here. You have some friends near my home territory, right? Over at Tahlequah.
That's right. Sancta Sophia Seminary. It's an educational institute. They deal a lot in spiritual and metaphysical subjects, and I'm going to be teaching the Enneagram there at the end of July of this year. I believe it's July 26th to the 30th. It's a one-week course. I'm not sure if it's open enrollment, but if anyone's interested, they could certainly contact them. They have a website, sanctasophia.org, and they could probably call them to find out.
Okay, we'll probably put a link to that on our website as well, so they can get information about that. You have an interesting website, too, and you have a couple of books there for sale. And I want to get into that in a minute, but first of all, you kind of went over this subject you're talking about automatically. Why don't you explain to the audience what we're talking about?
Well, we're talking about Wingmakers, I'm sure you're speaking.
Well, I'm thinking about what you're doing over in Tahlequah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I do quite a number of different things, most of them in the philosophical, metaphysical, and psychological areas. But the Enneagram is the study of personality types. An Enneagram test that people take, and it usually is quite accurate, and it indicates one of nine different personality types. And we've studied many of these different systems through the years. I'm speaking about my wife and I, and we found the Enneagram to be quite accurate for helping people in their spiritual and psychological.
Now, as far as, you have a type 1, type 2, type right on through 9, huh? And I guess you have shades of, minors and majors or whatever, type 1 with a 9 something or other or whatever.
That's right. You're pretty familiar with it, aren't you, Jerry?
Well, I've heard about it. I don't know much about it, really.
Yeah. Everyone has, like, a subtype, which is, for instance, like you said, if you were a 9 type, you would have a 1 wing or an 8 wing, and they're called, they're like sub-personalities in regular psychology.
I mean, I know it's interesting, it's kind of like astrology, but I guess there's actually some good uses for it as well.
Oh, most definitely. If you understand yourself, you're certainly going to have a better time at understanding other people, and certainly in this age, right human relations and understanding ourselves and the world around us is paramount to improving the world.
Now, we're going to get to the Wingmakers here in a moment because that's actually what we're doing here on the UFO show, and that's more or less connected to everything. And we're going to get to your books. I want to talk about that. I got one more question about this. I don't know. Would you call it a personality test? Or?
Yes. It's a 144 sample question test. And I believe they call it, I don't remember the exact terminology, but it's like a forced answer type of thing. It's like, are you this way or are you that way? And usually people have to go through this excruciating decision-making process, like, you know, but the test is designed to force you to choose one way or the other in order to break out that type.
Well, that's basically what I was going to get into is, people probably don't really like to say things unless you give them either or this or that, and they have to choose something. And I guess that has something to say about the test as well and the personality you're testing.
Yeah.
The one thing, have you ever run across people who take this test and obviously they are that type, but they just refuse to accept it?
Yeah, because...
I mean, I would think that would be fairly common.
Well, it is. Usually there's a shocking realization of suddenly seeing yourself as one of these types. And I should probably mention that the test we're talking about and the system of the Enneagram we're talking about has to do with the work of Don Rizzo and Russ Hudson. And they have their own website that's germane to this. And that's what I'm looking for right now on my computer, but perhaps...
Yeah, you'll get it to us, and we will post it. Are they psychiatrists, or they just come up with this, or are they motivational speakers? I mean, what qualifications did they
have? Well, other than just becoming very familiar with the system, like for many years, I forget a lot of the details. I haven't really studied... you know, Russ and Don that much, but I can tell you that there are various people with theories on the Enneagram. There are a lot of different systems out there, and I've studied with them personally years ago, and my feeling is, and my judgment is, that their system is probably one of the best out there, and they have backgrounds in study of psychology, but not on a professional level.
Yeah, just kind of curious about it. You have two books out on this website, and why don't you go ahead and give your website for our radio listeners?
It's planetworkpress.com.
All one word, planetworkpress.com, and your books are about what?
I'm kind of an eclectic person, but usually coming from a spiritual angle, so these two books have nothing to do with the Enneagram.
Well, that's interesting, because this is an eclectic radio show in many ways, at least the host is.
Well, the both books are on the topic of a world prayer called the Great Invocation. And the prayer was given in 1945, quite controversially, that if I could use a word like that, through mental telepathy. Supposedly, and it was given to a woman named Alice Bailey, supposedly by a Tibetan monk who was residing somewhere in the Himalayas at the time. And the world prayer is like a world prayer of peace. The interesting part that pertains to the books that I wrote is I was impressed with the idea in 1993. That these prayers, that this one particular prayer might be coded in some way. And I used a system called gematria, or the use of substituting numbers for letters, in order to discover that code. And the work developed as a thesis that I was working on that's directly connected with the seminary that I'm going to be at in Oklahoma in this summer. And I wrote a thesis on that and delivered it, and it was really taken quite well. And then I developed that into a book, and we self-published that book in 1997. And that book, that's called...
And then you had a follow-up book, what, 3 years later?
Yeah, in the year 2000, I published a second book called Hidden Foundations of the Great Invocation. We sell both those books on our website. And the second book was born out of a trip I took to New Zealand in order to introduce the first book. So my life seems to be one of these, one event chained to another event that leads to one thing after another, so... As you can see, there's a lot of there are a lot of different things that have happened to me through the years.
Wait, when you mentioned this prayer was coded, who coded it? I mean, what are we talking about here?
That's the interesting part. The prayer, if you call the Great Invocation, if you read it, it's a prayer that would appeal to most people around the world. It talks about the light of God, the love of God, the will of God, things like that, and bringing humanity to a point where we have basically right human relations on the earth, leading to peace. That's the whole impetus for the prayer. But I can't explain to the listeners out there why, but one night I was sitting waiting to use the computer. My wife was using it, and when she was finished, I wanted to write a paper, And while I was sitting there, I suddenly got the thought that I wonder what would happen if I did numerological work on the Great Invocation. So I just sat down there and I started substituting numbers for the letters. And I don't know if people out there are familiar with numerology or gematria. The letter A would be the number 1, and the letter B would be 2, and all the way through the alphabet. So Z would be 26. And I began working with it, and I got an answer, and the answer was that the entire invocation had a value of number 5. And that usually has to do with the mind and with change and with...
In numerology.
Yeah, in numerology, mm-hmm. Especially metaphysical aspects of it, not so much the personality angle. And so one thing led to another, and I just began to develop more and more thoughts about this. And I found out that there were number patterns hidden in this that symbolized or corresponded with other concepts that are part of the esoteric teachings or the ageless wisdom teachings that I had been studying through the Alice Bailey material. Now, the implications of this are that if people see the book and read the book, it's over 500 pages of information. The circumstantial evidence of number patterns in this thing preclude, in my estimation, that it was accidental. I believe that it was deliberate, that it was composed in such a way in the English language that that prayer on its hidden side was meant to carry symbolic teachings that dovetail with the teachings that this Tibetan master was giving to Alice Bailey for 30 years. He worked with her from 1919 to 1949 and gave her the prayer in 1945.
The interesting thing when you mention this, the prayer on the surface in the English language and then the meaning behind it, are they synonymous or do they go hand in hand? Or maybe I'm not making myself clear enough on it, but did it turn out to be what it appears to be? In other words, the message after you took the numbers.
Well, not exactly. It's
that's what I'm trying to find out.
The hidden messages in the number symbolism point to the fact that the prayer had its origins in very, very ancient times, and. To explain this in the correct way, I'm going to have to get into some other things, which I don't mind doing, but I just don't want the listener...
In other words, there's not an easy thumbnail answer other than you can just...
Well, I may as well drive right to the point. I had an intuitive sense that that prayer, not in its English version, but it's on its energetic level, because all things on the physical plane that we read as words and hear as sounds have a source on the inner planes as energies, all right? And I've always felt that that prayer originated somewhere in the system of Sirius, in the Sirius star system.
Now, this kind of is going to get into what we're talking about the Wingmakers, even.
Well, yeah, that's why things can become either very confusing here or can become very comprehensive. And the Tibetan teacher said that that Earth's humanity was deeply and mysteriously connected with the Sirian system. And now there again, those books had nothing at all to do with aliens or UFOs or ETs or anything of that nature. His books are purely spiritual philosophy and metaphysics. There were certain things at the time of his giving that information out that were not to be given to humanity until some future time. And so he never talked about ETs or anything of that nature. But he certainly hinted at a vast number of intelligences that existed in the universe at many different dimensional levels. And he said that In our day and age, we would start beginning to contact many different forms of intelligences that we were not at all familiar with, and that we were going to have to really begin to learn what reality really was, that we hardly had an inkling of what reality actually is. And so that prayer, at a more esoteric level, if you will, contains much esoteric information or hidden information that was not evident by the words.
I'd like to say we could do a show on this completely, but we want to do we want to get into the Wingmakers and everything. And since this is a UFO show, we've been talking about a recent controversy with Dr. Dan Burrish, who is a biologist, and there's questions on whether or not he's for real. I think he is myself, but I could be wrong, and you may have a different opinion about it. And I don't know how much you're really acquainted to the controversy, but supposedly he was working on a secret project up around Area 51, if not in Area 51, in which there was an entity called J-Rod. For lack of a J-Rod in the government term stands for something which I don't know what it stands for exactly. I've heard it before. And there seems to be a big controversy now on whether this is some sort of disclosure or a fake disclosure or a sidetrack issue or whatever. And we probably maybe should have talked this at the end of the show, but I wanted to get into it before we talked about the Wingmakers. What do you think about all of this, or are you familiar with this case at all?
Yeah, I've been listening to the story on your show and others, and I don't have a lot to offer in the area. One thing that, and of course this is simply my personal opinion on it, the talk about time travel, I don't know a lot about time travel, and I don't think too many people do. The Wingmakers involves time travel a little bit also. But there's something about the time travel aspect of the story that bothers me a little bit, and I can't tell you why. It's simply an intuitive sense. Because I believe that is part of the story, that this J-Rod has come back in order to save the genetic pool, or to do something to save humanity in the future.
That is one of the themes that some of the people are putting out. I'm not into that part of it necessarily. I'm more into it the fact that he was a victim of a crash of a UFO, and we kept him for a while, and now he may have gone back, he may not have, he may have died here, we don't know. And that he could do impressions of people's voices, and seemed to be very very glib about everything.
Well, from what I've said already on your show, and what I'll probably talk about soon in terms of Wingmakers, I probably should be the last person to say that I'm skeptical about anything. But I could say that it's certainly plausible that what he's his whole story is certainly plausible, because I've studied UFOs quite a bit. And I don't consider myself an expert, and I don't go out and give talks on these topics. But I think I can see the big picture pretty well. I would just say that some aspects of the story seem very plausible, and yet others seem to bother me in terms of this whole coming back from the future. Humanity, let's put it this way, if this is disinformation, people in general are very enamored with the idea of time travel. People get all excited about it. There's a whole glamour attached to the whole idea of traveling through time. And I believe if someone were going to float a story like this, that they might, in fact, use time travel as part of that story, because it does attract people's attention. The whole point, though, is what is the intent of the information. I think you always have to go back to this with any, whether it's wing makers or my material or anything. What is the underlying soul, if you will? What is the core issue? What is the intent or what is the purpose? How does the material make you feel when you encounter it? As you can see, I can get pretty metaphysical and philosophical.
I think really, basically, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, very much so. So I guess that's about my two cents on the subject.
Parts of the story we've covered for several years. It's kind of strange it's coming out now. And we actually had an explanation from Bill Hamilton why he thought it was coming out now, and that was because of politics and the people trying to expose it were trying to get rid of black projects, which certainly is reasonable. And so there's all kinds of layers that we could get into on this. Let's talk about wingmakers for a moment and two. Why don't you explain what this concept is and what it's all about? Do I have my information correctly that maybe there's a seed entity or something someplace?
Let's put it this way. The Wingmaker's material is something that is so new, so complex. There are many layers to it. You could probably do about four or five interviews with me, if you wish, about Wingmakers, and we would just begin to scratch the surface.
Well, we may do that as time goes along. You're going to be in Oklahoma, so I'll have you as a captive. I'll track you
down. Well, that'll be fun. Look forward to that one. But I discovered the Wingmakers website. Basically, the Wingmakers material appeared on the website, on the internet, in 1998. I think it was around November 23rd or something to that effect.
This is my birthday, November 25th.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure. I think it was around November 23rd.
Uh-huh.
And the material was just posted. There was no webmaster. There was nowhere you could email. And it was quite controversial. No one knew what it was for or who put it there. And people, of course, suspected that it was, because it was oriented toward ETs, people, of course, weren't sure what it was all about. And some people thought it was a hoax, and some people still do. Other people thought it was the real thing, that this was information that was supposedly coming from a doctor, Neruda. And in the beginning, the information was being given by someone called Dr. Anderson. And he had supposedly defected from a super secret government agency, unacknowledged, called the ACIO, Advanced Contact Intelligence Organization. And he tells his story through a novel, through a novel that was appearing on the site. Now, so I could go in many different directions here, but let me just move forward in time. I discovered the website in the year 2000, late 2000, around Christmas, and I downloaded some of the information, read it, and it seemed quite interesting to me. And I laid it aside till after Christmas because, as you know, we all get so crazy around that time of the year. I just didn't have time for it. And then I went back to the site in March of 2001, and they were selling music on the site. And I ordered some of the music, and they were selling a CD-ROM called First Source, Volume 1. And the CD-ROM contained the beginning of a novel, the first 240 pages of a novel about this Dr. Neruda. Now, Dr. Anderson, who had been on the site in 1998, in the final product of the material that was published in the year 2000, the CD-ROM, was now known as Dr. Neruda. And that in itself caused a lot of confusion because people wanted to know why the name had been changed. And people began to think that somehow this site had been compromised, that the original Dr. Anderson had somehow been laid aside or set aside or put aside in some manner, and that someone else had taken over the site and was now distributing the information in a co-opted or compromised way. In my experience and from what I know about Wingmakers, that's just not the fact. That's just not true. The information, in fact, was released in 1998 in order to attract as many people as possible and to generate interest. But because so many things are downloaded from the internet and people basically, I can't be nice about it, but lots of people just take information from people's sites and use it for their own purposes, many of the details or small details of the story were not given in their final version. So that's why Dr. Anderson was actually Dr. Neruda in the original materials. As they are published by Wingmakers, Dr. Neruda is the person and not Dr. Anderson.
Okay, now Dr. Neruda, is he here in this country?
Well, you know? That's when the story gets more interesting.
Good.
Dr. Sala, in his book, Exopolitics, mentions Dr. Neruda quite a bit.
Yeah, we had Dr. Michael Sala on the other day.
Yeah, and I have the book, and we've been reading it. I've almost finished it, and it's very good. I think he's done an excellent job of creating an overview of the whole situation. And he mentions Dr. Neruda. And in one of his own endnotes that I have here, page 145 of his book, he actually says that the actual existence of Dr. Jamison Neruda as a defector from a clandestine NSA organization is controversial and almost impossible to verify. There is a probability that Dr. Neruda, quote unquote, is used as a pseudonym for someone who actually does fill a position similar to that described by Neruda, and so on and so forth. And then he goes on to say that people think the Wingmakers material is disinformation, but he has examined it, and he thinks it's very worthy of study because he thinks he's quite impressed with the material itself. So the Wingmakers site initially began as a story about this Dr. Neruda. I'm using the original, the real name, okay? But Dr. Neruda is a character who, in a novel, who may represent a real-world figure, meaning a real-world, I don't mean a world leader, but a real person in the world who does hold a position such as described in the material. But that, is, in fact, is not the person's real name. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, that's not the first time that's been done.
Sure. But, in fact, there may, let's just even make it broader. There may be Neruda-like characters, or Neruda-like professionals, or Neruda-like scientists who exist at these hidden levels of these organizations. And this Dr. Neruda represents a composite character that a novelist would create, but it's based on real information. Now, we need to take this a step further now in order to get this out on the interview so we get it in, let's put it that way. The material that's created, all the material that people will find on the Wingmakers website is being created by a man who simply calls himself James. James.
Okay, now I've had people tell me that that website's not created by any human.
Well, James considers himself a human, but not of this earth.
Well, now, what about this material? I mean, what is it? That is it like a holy grail, or what?
Well, if you go to the website, you'll find that the material consists of the novel itself, about Dr. Neruda. All right, we could talk about that. That might be a good place to start.
I'm curious what Dr. Neruda does in this novel.
Okay, let me just briefly tell you what's at the site, and then we'll get right into it.
Folks, in the background, a selection from one of the Wingmakers CDs, music from the future, music from out of this world. Leave it up to you to decide. more about the Wingmakers. This is Jerry Piven. You're listening to the UFO Files.
The UFO Files Show.
All I ever wanted to love was someone like you. Someone who looks at the river frozen and knows underneath the current remains. Someone who knows that when the sky is absent of color beneath the globe, another world comes to light. All I ever wanted was to love someone like you. Someone who can untangle my life in their golden light and steal my eyes, knowing I could never turn away. I could never turn away. From the Wingmakers CD. We're talking right now with the man to tell us a little bit more about the Wingmakers period. John, welcome back to the show. And what about the Wingmakers? Why don't you give me a little background if you can. John, it's your turn.
The material consists of a novel. It consists of music, philosophy, poetry, a glossary of terms, and other miscellaneous writings. And it's all quite comprehensive, and it goes to many levels, and it's going to be distributed over the next 11 or 12 years, or maybe more, a little at a time. And that seems to be a plan that's in the works, and that's just the way it said the material will be distributed.
I want to know about this guy named James. I've heard he's not from this world. I mean, tell me a little bit more about James. What do you know about him?
I know some things about him, yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's part of my personal story. That's why I guess I'm talking about it. And, maybe not somebody else, but, you know, we'll just take it, leave it at that. But we can go into that part, and we can go into the novel part.
I want to know about the novel first.
Okay.
We mentioned that, and we've talked about it, so that would be long.
All right. The novel...
Even though I'm dying to find out about James.
The story itself has been, we've got about one quarter of the novel has been released. It's about 249 pages. The novel's about a couple of college students who are hiking in the Chaco Canyon area of New Mexico in around 1996, and they find some sort of a strange artifact on the desert floor. Looks like a rock of some sort, and it's got all kinds of strange symbols on it. Looks like Anasazi Indian type symbols. They take it to their college professor, and he's an expert in things like this, and he can't figure out what it really is all about. He can't decipher it. And he made a few phone calls about it to some people, and somehow, to make a long story short, the ACIO gets involved.
This organization.
That's right, because their whole role is to retrieve various types of alien vehicles, aliens themselves, artifacts, anything that's found. So they come and they talk him into it in a very nice way, and he hands it over to them, and he's very happy that he's cooperated. They take it back to their lab, and they're trying to figure out what this thing is. And it turns out that it's a homing device. And and the device becomes activated and it basically directs them to go back to Chaco Canyon to a particular location. So they send a team out there.
Done by mental telepathy.
Remote viewers.
Okay.
ACIO has pretty powerful remote viewers.
Okay.
I'm not going to speak about real time because I have no idea.
I understand.
So they go out there and they find themselves directed to a cavern that was hidden in the canyon there, and the team goes in and they find that the cavern looks like it was created artificially, and the floors are polished. There's no dirt, there's no debris, there's nothing. And they begin to explore it. And they find themselves going through a corridor that's kind of like a winding stairway, but it's, it's on a slant. And as they go little ways on this spiral, they see a doorway, and they go through it, and they have their flashlights and on. Up on the wall in front of them in this room, they see this wall painting there. And it's this beautiful painting that has symbols in it and all types of things. And they find an artifact in there also, some sort of a device that looked like a crystal. And they really don't know what this is, but it looks like, it doesn't look like any primitive peoples made this. So they continue exploring this cavern, and they find that there are 23 chambers, and each one contains an artifact, an artistic artifact, and a technological artifact. And it's in the shape of a spiral. Then when they get to the very top, the 23rd chamber, they find another painting, but the artifact there looks like an optical disc. Maybe something about the size of a CD. And they take the CD back to their labs, and Dr. Neruda now, he is part of the team, I probably should have mentioned that was sent out there. There are about six people. Well, Dr. Neruda is an expert in ancient languages. He's a linguist. And after about 5 days, they break the code of this CD. They get the index, and there's over 8,000 pages of symbols that are decoded by their computers. Now, the ACIO has computers that are supercomputers. They're like maybe 50 times or 100 times faster than the computers that we have in the outside world. And so their computers decipher all this information and translate it. And here's where the story gets interesting. The translations of that information is the actual music and the philosophy and the poetry and all the rest of it that you can find at the Wingmaker's website.
In fact, the music came from this.
Yes.
And the poetry, and it's on the poetry's on various subjects,
yes.
Right?
There were two poems associated, apparently, with each one of the chambers. And what they found out was the cavern was a model of human DNA. It represented one of the helix, where we have a double helix. So this had the 23 chambers represented 23 chromosomes. And each painting is supposed to be a key to understanding our one portion of our DNA, or one chromosome.
And the novel is only one-fourth through, or it published at least. How does the novel end?
No one knows.
Okay, I mean, this particular, does it just stop?
Well, this portion of the novel ends with, we'll continue with this a little bit here.
This is a fascinating story. I didn't mean to get you off of it.
What happens is, we find out that there was also a 24th chamber, and that chamber was hidden when they got up on the 23rd, the floor of that chamber was all broken up. It was not polished or finished the way the other ones were. Sort of like in the Great Pyramid, when down in the bottom part of the Great Pyramid, it's a very rough floor type of thing. And these are all metaphysical symbols, of course. So the unfinished floor in chamber 23, if you don't, I'm no expert in DNA, but I know the 23rd chromosome has to do with the X and the Y, the male and the female. And the implication symbolically is that humanity is not finished yet, and we aren't fully developed to our capacity. And that's why that room was left unfinished. But they thought they damaged the structure when they went in and took the artifact out. So they did a sonar reading of the structure, and they found out that there was a chamber hidden underneath. So they go back in, they go to the 23rd chamber, and they realize that there's approximately a 1 foot in diameter, passage or air shaft, let's say, under the floor. It was under a trap door. So they can't get a human down there, so they send a camera down there. And in that chamber is another wall painting, and what is called the glyph wall. And the glyph wall is... it looks like a schematic with symbols all over it. And this 24th chamber is supposed to represent the hidden portions of humanity's DNA, probably pointing to the junk DNA that scientists don't really know what it's for. But Wingmakers claims that humanity will be upgraded in this century, and that will be our saving grace.
Do we have a clue what they mean by upgraded? I mean, do we still have male, female, or is it?
We will still have male and female. Upgraded.
Thank goodness, because I love women. But anyway.
Hey, we have to remain human. We also have to maintain a sense of humor. That's my motto. We maintain a sense of humor through this whole thing. But no, we will still remain that way. But keep in mind that we probably have only maybe 10% of the Wingmakers material released to date. So a lot of the things I may say in the interview tonight, I may not have answers to, and I certainly don't claim to have all the answers, but the implication is that we're going to have a sixth and a seventh sense developed beyond our five senses, and that we eventually, that this 24th chromosome will lead to the discovery of the human soul, and I don't mean through religion, but through science. And if we could distill everything that Wingmakers is about, it isn't about ETs, it isn't about aliens, it isn't about the ACI or any of they are side issues. The real issue will be what Wingmakers calls the Grand Portal. And the Grand Portal, according to Wingmakers, will be the irrefutable scientific discovery of the human soul and the multidimensional reality in which we live. And when this is discovered, it will completely alter the landscape of humanity. It will completely alter the belief systems of humanity and change everything. And it will. This is going to be a gradual process leading to the ultimate discovery of the soul. And once that's discovered, it talks about the timeline now looks like around 2075. Once that's discovered, humans will be able to explore the multiverse through their consciousness and maybe through their bodies. I don't know that part yet, and that hasn't been revealed, so I'm speculating a little as to the meaning.
Now,
but it will definitely alter
that, which is certainly nothing to pass off lightly. What about James?
James, when I first got involved with Wingmakers, and I've been studying metaphysics and all since I was 15, 18 years old. I've been meditating. I've been in esoteric schools and meditation since I was 23. So I'm in my 50s now. And I have a lot of experience with reading lots of different kinds of literature. And when I began to study the Wingmakers material in March of 2001, I recognized that there was something very deep here and very interesting. On the first source disc, when people purchase it, it has hidden chambers in it. You know, there's a metaphor in all of this. In other words, if you put that CD-ROM in, you load it into your computer, and you begin reading different things and looking at images, well, sometimes you'll scroll over little places where there are hidden links, and when you click on them, other pages open up. It's very interesting. And one of those
somebody did a lot of work.
Yes, and that work was done by this man who calls himself James. Now, I stumbled, you know, everybody will discover it. It isn't like I knew, but everyone eventually finds it. And in that disc is a letter of disclosure. And in that letter, this man says that his name is James, and that's all you need to call him. And that he is here to fulfill one mission, and one mission only, to help humanity discover its immortality. And that there will be people born in the next three generations who will use the Wingmaker's material, which is now only in its infancy, but they will eventually use this material and be inspired by it, and they will be the people who will eventually be the new psychologists, the new philosophers, the new scientists who will discover the human soul. And it's his mission to create those materials and resources that will make that happen. People who feel drawn to this material today are kind of like, let's just call ourselves special ops people. I'll use that term. Who go in ahead of time before this thing really takes off and sort of prepare the ground. And that's what's happening now. So James says that he is here to do this, and he's going to do it through the creation of these Wingmakers materials. The novel, the art, the music, all of it, he says, is done by him. Let me point out, though, real quick, this is not a religious mission. It has nothing to do with religion. That there's been enough religion already. I'm not against religions. I think they do have a place. But he said the world is now ready for scientific answers, that humanity has matured beyond the point where it can only... faith will not get us over the hump here. We need scientific facts.
Well, James, in previous lives, was he a political leader, a religious leader, a thinker, a philosopher? Was he Homer?
He may be all of the above or some of those. He doesn't say. He just said that. But I have...
Is there a photo of James anyplace?
No. But I do know that he's a real person, and he lives somewhere in the northeast United States.
That was my next question. I wanted to know where he was.
It's supposed to be somewhere in the northeast United States. When I saw that letter, something happened to me, and I thought, you know, I think that because of my work with the Alice Bailey material and all the rest of it, I thought that he was one of these special teachers that remains in the background. And I'm sure many listeners have heard about beings like this. They're humans who have transcended the human world, and they exist as guides, or they go on to other places. And I thought, wow, he sounds like one of these teachers. And so I wrote a letter to the webmaster, and I told him who I was and my background, and he answered my letter. People know, you know, if you go to the website, Mark Hempel is the webmaster of Wingmakers, and he has his own story too. And most people know that because it's out there in the public domain.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the story, but I am familiar with the name. So.
And so I started writing to him, and we started exchanging emails. And Mark, to be quite frank, I'm sure he won't mind me saying this, he didn't know a spiritual teacher or a master of the wisdom or whatever from a birdcage. I mean, this gentleman, he is a real gentleman. He has tremendous integrity. I've gotten to know him. I trust him implicitly.
Does he live in the Northeast too?
No, he lives in Minneapolis.
Okay.
Yeah, he has his own business. He's a consultant. And he simply took on the Wingmakers project as a project, he put it up there. And then he took a lot of heat when it went up because he didn't even know what was going on. People can find out who a webmaster is or anything by looking at source code and whatnot.
Yeah.
So people eventually traced the webmaster, began sending him all kinds of hate mail and everything else, and he didn't even know what was going on. I'm talking 1990.
Uh-huh.
Well, in any event, we exchanged emails, and eventually I wrote him a letter, and I said, I think I know who James might be. I think he was identified in the Alice Bailey material. And that's where there is a connection, tangentially, obviously, between Wingmakers and my esoteric studies and my books that I've written.
Well, who do you think James might be?
Well, he was mentioned in the Alice Bailey material as... there are various teachers mentioned in that Alice Bailey material. One of them was called Master P. Now, there's a rap singer out there called Master P, and that's not who we're talking about. The letter P stands for something, but it's not the real initial of this person that this Tibetan teacher talked about. But he simply said that he resided somewhere in North America, that he was an expert in human psychology, that he understood... it's implied that he understood how the human brain works, how our minds work, and all that. And these books were written, the first mention of a Master P in the Alice Bailey materials in a book published in 1921. And the next mention is a book published in 1935, and another one in 1947 or something to that effect.
Has Mark ever seen James?
I believe Mark has met James.
Okay.
And that's happened very recently.
And we assume that James is an old guy. Well, he is, obviously, age-wise, but I'm talking about looks.
Well,
Or does somebody know? Is there a description of him someplace?
Well, he's supposed to be about... He would look like he's about 40 years old.
Oh, really?
He looks sort of like a regular person.
Okay, okay.
But it's said that his eyes can be very, I'm not talking about weird science fiction type eyes, I'm talking about penetrating eyes, that his eyes can be disconcerting to people.
Well, the eyes are the mirror of the soul.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And
James, does he say he's from another world, or is he here, or, I mean...
he's a human being. He said he was born as a human being to parents just like we were. That his DNA would look just like ours if we looked at it at birth, you know? But that he is aware of where he has come from, whereas most humans don't know. We're born into this world, and we forget where we actually came from. That's a mystery to us. But he is fully conscious on many levels, and but he is a teacher who represents something called the Lyricus Teaching Order.
In a nutshell, what's that?
The Lyricus Teaching Order is one of the most ancient guiding orders of advanced beings that exist in the universe. This very quickly, a little bit of cosmology, according to the Wingmakers. The Wingmakers themselves are supposed to be the original human race that was created almost at the beginning of evolution.
This is what I wanted to get at, and they were here.
Well, they were born... Well, that's a little hard to... When you say where, we don't really know where, because we don't really know what the condition of the universe may have been back when they came into existence.
I'm just an old newsman. Who, what, where, when, why?
You're forgiven. I'm a New Jersey boy here. The Wingmakers are also called the Central Race, and they're supposedly the...
That name alone indicates as many races.
That's right, but they were... when they were created, they were simply light beings. They were light energies. I don't know how else to describe it.
Okay. They had no physical body.
But they certainly had a form, and they certainly had consciousness, and they developed a tremendous intelligence as they developed. And what they did, according to the Wingmaker's story, is they created the DNA template that allowed souls to explore the physical universe using the physical bodies that we know, you know, in our world today. That we are all entities, we're all immortal souls who are exploring the physical dimensions of this universe. And but there had to be a means developed for that exploration to happen. So the central race, the Wingmakers, being the original race, they, James has said, you could also call us cosmic geneticists.
Okay.
We created the DNA template that allows a human soul to inhabit a physical form. All right. Now, out of those Wingmakers, he said not all Wingmakers work with humanity. There are many other life forms. There are many other evolutions, and Wingmakers work with others. But the group that works with humans specifically are known as the Lyricus Teaching Order.
Okay. I wonder what these other life forms are like. I mean, are they beyond human ken? I mean, can we even comprehend?
Wingmakers materials not describe them yet. But you might say the what people call the angelic or the diva kingdom might be an example of another life form. All right?
We have only about 3 or 4 minutes left here. Time flies.
It sure does.
And we could spend a lot of time on this. One thing I want to ask you, it's a question that's been asked me before. If there is such thing as a human soul, and the Wingmakers and what you've been saying, and you're the perfect person to ask this because you've been into this for all your life, as you said, in one way or another, in these teachings. Okay, there's 6.5 billion souls here on Earth now, and it keeps growing all the time. Where did these souls come from? I mean, if they lasted forever.
Well, what I can tell you from the other metaphysical perspective.
Yeah, I'm not asking.
There are supposedly.
I mean, that seems to me to be a philosophical question. I mean, is there an endless supply of these souls, or
no,
what?
No, there aren't. In our Earth's evolution, there are supposedly 60 billion souls available for incarnation. But obviously, not all of them are incarnating at the same time. Right now, we have about 6.5 billion on the planet.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, that explains, at least to me and others who study these things, that accounts for where these souls are coming from. Now, just because a soul is not experiencing life on the physical plane does not mean it's not living somewhere else on the physical plane, maybe on another planet or another dimension.
Do we have any idea where these the Wingmakers, James and his group, hail from? I mean, is it each galaxy has someone? Or?
Yeah, there are indications through some of the material that's been released that the Lyricus Teaching Order is quite well organized at many different levels. He talks about archetypes, DNA archetypes that exist in each galaxy. And that galaxies are divided up into sectors, like our galaxy has approximately 1,000 sectors. So I'm getting the idea here that this Lyricus Teaching Order is very well organized. They have specific protocols that they use when they come to a planet's population to prepare it for this grand portal. And that's what they're doing now. He says they don't come to a planet until that planet has developed a global communications network, because he says the internet is extremely important for the for what they're trying to do here. And I think it's important to mention here, Jerry, that the most recent development with Wingmakers is that the Lyricus Teaching Order itself has now created its own website, lyricus.org. That's Lyricus.
Now, who's the webmaster for that?
Mr. Hempel.
Okay.
James apparently told him that eventually there would be a Lyricus website, but he would tell him when the time was right. And according to what I know, information is released according to Lyricus teacher's ability to read light emanation coming from human beings, and that they gauge the way this information is absorbed psychologically and spiritually by humans and mentally. And they have their own methods of discerning when more information will be released.
Well, we've just scratched the surface, and our time is up.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I'm sure there's...
we'll be doing some more shows about this, and I'll be seeing you when you get here in Oklahoma.
I'm looking forward to it.
And thank you very much for the information, and I look forward to meeting you in person.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Okay.
Thanks for inviting me on.